Folks, ladies and gentlemen, it's your Chapo coming to you live from the scene of the crime, the Chapo Election Desk 2018 Arena Decides. It's been a long week, but we're back with you now to help you digest some of the political news and views of the day that has happened since the election. Sitting in today, joining me, as usual, is Matt Chrisman, but in a slight change of programming, we've got producer Chris Wade on the mic, stepping out from behind the ones and twos. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Felix, we had planned on him being here. He's a little AWOL right now, so instead you have me, which I guess is a little like reaching for a double tall shot of Monster Energy and getting a lightly lime flavored seltzer instead. But I'll do my best to fill.
Yeah, it's like shoes. It's like you're reaching for the Monster Energy drink, but instead you're getting Earl Grey hot. Yes. Yeah, no, I mean, as you might know, Admiral Felix Biederman has been called
celebrating
back to service
today
by the Navy SEAL Army Ranger SWAT team, as you may have seen from this past Veterans Day. Felix always makes an appearance in local newspapers, online, and Facebook groups. He was on SNL this weekend, actually scolding Pete Davidson for making fun of him last week on Weekend Update. Y'all see that?
Yeah, he had a few great jokes, and then he looked right into the camera and said, submit your blood to the state. It was really encouraging.
Which is really what people want from their late-night comedy programming.
Yeah, there's nothing I like more than kicking back and enjoying a blood-stained, paddock-level murderer and, would-be viceroy of America just look into the camera and tell you how important it is to never criticize him and submit to his every whim, and those of his fellow psychotic veterans who want to take over the country. It's pretty great.
Damn, I didn't know Felix did that. That's wild. No, of course, we're talking about that other guy that was on Saturday Night Live. First, they brought on Felix, as the good veteran, and then they brought on the bad veteran.
Yeah, this guy, Dan Crenshaw, who before he got lightly made fun of on Saturday Night Live for having an eye patch, was most known for helping preside over a psychotically anti-immigrant and racist Facebook page while running for Congress as a Republican in Texas. Now, thankfully, that's all gone. No one talks about that. They're all just thanking him for his service. You got to love Saturday Night Live, folks. It's, it's just the classic satire. It's just a classic satire of feckless Hollywood liberalism. And it does a great job every week of reminding you just how pathetic and morally bankrupt that tradition is.
And just what's interesting to me about the Pete Davidson and the eye patch guy thing is, like, don't you feel like we're about 10 years beyond the, like, everybody loves the troops stage in our culture? Like, do you think, like, now it's just like everyone loves Trumps and, you know, the troops or whatever, but, like, we're past the Iraq war height of where everybody has to thank a troop constantly.
You'd think that, because Trump, remember, in his campaign, he famously and hilariously said, I like the guys who didn't get captured, talking about John McCain. And that was, every reporter thought, well, he's done for. We all love the troops. You can't say anything bad about the troops. Turns out, no, it doesn't matter. And it turns out the only people who still care about this sort of ritualistic kowtowing are libs.
Lorne Michaels.
It's all inverted now, because at the same weekend that they are humping eye patch dude, we have all the Trump stuff where he's avoiding centennial remembrances of World War I because he's afraid of getting his hair wet, which of course only makes me think about what he looks like with wet hair more, which is one of the most horrifying images I can conjure in my mind, other than him dancing to Hotline Bling on
Saturday Night Live.
Begin with.
Yeah.
I believe it was David Roth, friend of the show, who said that it's his hair wet is like four or five strands that are the exact size and texture of lasagna, just flapping off the side of his
nice
temples.
Sort of like a pappardelle style noodle. Who honestly, I don't care about all this World War One remembrance stuff.
Like, get over it, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, dude, come on. Like, if
you don't know anybody who died in World War One,
if the people of France and Germany and England really want to remember World War One, they should kill their royal families and ruling class, because that would be like a proper remembrance for that. What that war?
Well, I don't know what
was.
You guys are talking about. I started the morning by lighting two little votive candles next to my framed picture of Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
I put it next to my copy of their greatest album.
The first one?
The first one. Yes. The only one that anyone remembers because it had that one song on
it. Hey, Take Me Out. How about Take Me to That Warm Remembrance for our Mistress Day with an umbrella, folks.
Folks. And of course, the other hilarious Trump-related thing with Trump is that as part of his campaign to scare people about immigrants, he put 5,000 troops to just sit in the desert.
In a tent city,
thousands of miles away from not only where this caravan is, but where it's headed, with nothing to do. Many of them, they're going to miss Thanksgiving. And, of course, not a word about it since the election. No one said a goddamn thing. The caravan is off of the news. Trump isn't talking about it, but they're still there. And you know what? I bet most of them still love him.
Yes.
They're going to be eating fucking MRE on Thanksgiving Day, and they're going to be like, God bless you for keeping us safe, my beloved President Trump. I will die for you.
Putting the troops in Boer War-style concentration camps to fight the caravan and own the libs.
But you know what? They're happy to do it. I bet you most of them are happy to do it.
Yeah, I really feel like, transition a little bit into the midterm elections, which are now thankfully, blissfully over.
Now it's time for 2020 primaries, baby.
Oh, that started like yesterday, for sure. Mm-hmm. No, but I feel like more wasn't made of the fact that Trump literally dispatched the military on American soil to supposedly combat some entirely
made up
threat, and then seemed to imply that they would open fire on migrants if they threw rocks at them when they were trying to cross the border or something.
That's what's insane, because it's one thing to do that kind of fear-mongering. Obviously, it's horrible and noxious and transparent, but if you're a hog who is terrified of anyone who's, you know, darker than a fucking paper bag lunch, you kind of respond to it. But don't you think, don't you stop and think for a second when they just stop talking about it immediately the day after an election happens? Doesn't that make some sort of vestigial thing in your brain sort of tingle a little bit, just get a little itchy? Oh, this thing I was terrified of to my core, and 2 days ago, some Honduran showing up at P.F. Chang's with a fucking machete. Now I don't care about it at all, and I've completely forgotten about it. Like, doesn't that do anything to your brain? Of course not.
Of course not. Of course not. But I'll tell you what did something to my brain was the midterm elections. And it's been it's been a week.
Mine too.
I would just like to thank all the Matt Christmans who stopped by our election night live stream.
Yes.
Including Black Christman and Lady Matt Christman. but it's been a week out, and I've had time to digest it. And I would say, a week out, my take on election night is that it was a huge wet fart for the Democrats. And that's still basically my take. However, things don't look quite as bad for the Democrats as they did on election night. Particularly, Kristen Sinema has won her election.
Hell yeah. I'm looking forward to Lady Max Baucus being in the Senate for many years. It's going to be great.
No, I hope that she reverts to her 2002 Sinema.
Man. Can you imagine
all these press photos of her digging in the congressional dumpster to get her free lunch?
Can you imagine if this was all just a long con, that she just suppressed her her freegan anarchism to get to the Senate, and now she's just going to bust loose? She's going to just show up in the Senate like with a fucking bucket of red paint to throw at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
Code pink people show up, and she's like, no, I got this.
Yeah. Oh, that'll rule. But no, that's not going to happen. She's going to be awful.
She just lights up Mitch McConnell with a paintball gun.
Yeah.
So Sinema won. And then in Florida and Georgia, the Nelson Scott, Gillum DeSantis, and Abrams Kemp races are all still in recounts. Gillum, in particular, has withdrawn his concession. And these are all by state laws going into recounts because of how close they are. And, of course, Trump and the entire Republican Party are doing, it's 2000 is back, baby. The Brooks Brothers riot, once again, are trying to send their, an army of preppies to chant, we must be seen. Don't count the votes. Don't count the votes.
I believe fucking Roger Stone is back.
Roger Stone.
He was there for the 2000 Brooks Brothers riot season. He's there again. It is astounding how time is just a flat, stupid fucking circle.
Although now he's kind of upgraded from Brooks Brothers to a kind of advanced cosplay uniform of some kind of a steampunk villain.
Yeah. the it's the mechanical goggles
yes.
and steam powered jetpack riot.
Yeah, and he has a little derringer that comes out of his sleeve to shoot hanging chads at people.
Yeah, but that so you've got Florida, which surprise, surprise, didn't spend the last 18 years after a historic fuck up doing anything to Florida. Its electoral system, which that's Florida, baby. And then Georgia, where everything we said was going to happen happened, which is Brian fucking Kemp stole an election in front of everybody. There were massive lines in the populous minority heavy sectors of Atlanta throughout the major city.
State troopers pulling over buses of elderly African Americans.
Well, we knew that
that
was happening before
home.
The election day, so that was already
I'm just, like, trying to remember.
That was already
all the
happening.
But
the big thing is
then,
on election day is that you had huge, huge lines because a lot of polling places had very few machines, and they found in warehouses brand new wrapped voting machines in the thousands that never were distributed.
Like 700 voting machines.
That's in in one place. It's over 1,000.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It's actually almost 2,000, and they were never distributed to polling stations. It's just literal theft. And of course, they're just doing the thing where they say, it's very unbecoming of you to point out that we stole this election, and you should really be a good sport about all of this and just concede, which, you know, has worked in the past, and a slight bit of sunlight is to see that it is not actually working this time. Stacey Abrams has not conceded. Abrams and Gillum and Nelson have either failed to concede or unconceded in Gillum's case.
I didn't know that was an option.
Well, the thing is, it's not an official thing. It's just some ceremonial bullshit where you call them on the phone. It's like they're saying no taking backsies. It's like, it doesn't fucking matter. It's all absolutely ceremonial. What matters is when the fucking votes are certified.
I feel I should remind our young whippersnapper audience that the 2000 election, Al Gore conceded and stopped the recount for, quote, the good of the country, basically, and helped inaugurate, you know, the war on terror and the Iraq war. But by every...
Well, he did unconcede, too.
He unconceded, but then, like, as he stopped the recount, right? Or, like, what stopped the recount? Because by
the
any...
The Supreme Court
stopped the recount.
They stole it.
Yeah. But by any conceivable measure, the recount would have certified Al Gore as the winner of Florida.
Probably.
And the winner of the presidential election.
Most likely. I mean, obviously, there's no way to know for sure because they stopped fucking counting.
Okay, what I mean is
But independent audits of the... like remaining ballots estimate that, yeah, he would have won.
What I mean is, for the good of the country, is that he did not protest the Supreme Court outright stealing his presidency from him at all.
Yeah.
But the thing is,
how is that going to happen? He's fucking Al Gore. He's not getting anybody in the streets on his behalf. And that's the real reality of this thing.
The Gorist militia assembles around the Supreme Court.
If you fail in the channels and the courts and officials and the people who are in charge of certifying these results, certify a result, what do you have to do? The only real action is some sort of mass protests or disobedience. That's not going to happen. I mean, who's going to do that on behalf of Democrats, any Democrat? So that means that really they can do whatever they want. And honestly, there's 0% chance that if Trump loses in 2020, he will accept the outcome. That's just the fact, and people need to actually have a game plan for that, because he's not going to accept the results.
I don't know. I think this Supreme Court will probably make the right decision.
Yes, I have full faith in Brett Kavanaugh, and with Ruth Bader Ginsburg having broken her ribs.
Who will by that time be a brain and a stem in a jar.
After a janitor accidentally knocks out the plug that's keeping her alive. She gets replaced by the ultimate warrior or whatever the fuck. I think they're probably going to rule in favor of Trump and say, you're right, these are not real results.
Ric Flair drip.
Woo. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, a week out now, like looking at the midterm elections, the Democrats won. What was it like? It's their biggest congressional in the House. It's their biggest victory since 1974. And like, you can look at it like in one way, you could say they like greatly overperformed, given that they're playing on a map that is literally drawn by the other side to prevent them from winning.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
On the other side,
This they want. I just want to, as an example of that, they want to. I believe something like 51% of the votes cast for Congress in North Carolina, and they got 3 out of 13 seats.
So they got 51% of the votes cast in the state of North Carolina for House seats.
Yeah.
And then got 3 of the 13.
Yeah.
That seemed, that's
that was a map that had been declared unconstitutionally gerrymandered, but then a higher court said, no, actually, it's
fine. You know what they call that? We live in a republic.
Yes. Not a goddamn democracy.
A republic, ma'am, if you can keep it.
Yes.
Is what Ben Franklin said to the French widow he just knocked up. So, you know, Nancy Pelosi is now going to be Speaker of the House, and she's, you know, super happy to get that gavel back. But
and she's super happy to reach across the aisle.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
Let the reaching begin.
So here's, you look at it two ways. On the one, there were like a lot of like small bright spots in this election. Like, for instance, the Democrats seem to have lost most of their major marquee, you know, big time matchups. Like I said, except in Florida and Georgia, we'll see how that recount goes. But don't hold your breath. Like you said, considering who's counting the votes,
yeah,
or who's in charge of all this shit. And again, Florida and Georgia, just cursed states, 100% up and down. But like, for instance, Beto, I still don't know how to say that.
Apparently Beto.
I'm going to call him Beto.
We're gringos. We can call him Beto, whatever.
Like, he lost to Ted Cruz. You know, we were really hoping that Cruz would you know, go back to Mordor or wherever the fuck.
6 more years of watching his jiggly face occasionally haunt your television.
Watching him rise out of his tank of brackish water to refuse to give unanimous consent to a vote to, you know, extend cancer treatment to orphans or something.
No, he'll be issuing a statement from his giant floating water tank that the Bene Gesserit witch must leave and that Paul Atreides must be killed by the Padishah Emperor and his Sadukar legions. So O'Rourke lost to Cruz. That sucks. But like, for instance, in Texas, it turns out that Beto is actually such a strong candidate that this was among the worst massacres for Republicans in Texas at the state level almost ever.
Yeah, they got
really
ritzed.
Wiped out down ballot, down ticket. Like, even though Beto lost his election, he really did get a lot of people out to vote, and down ticket was a huge, huge boost for the Democrats, like winning all kinds of judgeships. And mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were certain areas where like every Republican judge was wiped out of certain districts.
Yeah, Houston, for example. Yeah.
So, that's good, including one guy who was considered to be like their front runner to be the next governor of Texas.
Whoop.
So that's good. That's good. But, you know, and then again, but then overall, the Republicans expanded their majority in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And Nancy Pelosi is, of course, now like, okay, biggest Democrat congressional victory since 1974. And then what's the first thing they said? We will not go after the Republicans like they went after us. It's our duty to find common ground.
Hell yeah.
And I don't know, pass an infrastructure bill or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is Nancy Pelosi. This is the outcome of this election, of whether it's a blue wave or a blue trickle. The Democrats get back the House and basically are already looking for ways to compromise. They're looking for any way other than to represent the people who voted for them.
Well,
they're looking for a way to...
They are representing for who voting for them, and that is really the dark cloud inside the silver lining of all of these races flipping, is that the reason this happened... This is a record-breaking turnout for a midterm, like 49%. Wow, give yourselves a hand.
Now, have you guys been seeing the thing where people have been trying to outdo each other, basically, with how big the turnout for the midterms was? Like, oh, this is the biggest midterm turnout since the civil rights legislation was passed. Well, actually, it's the biggest turnout since women won the right. It's like,
yeah.
By any mean you go back, it's like the more people voted in midterms in like a century.
Yeah, it's a lot. And obviously... Think about this fact. Think about all those lines that were not just in places like Texas where there was like an actual conspiracy to steal an election, but just places where, oh, dope, not enough ballots, or a place like New York State where there were massive lines in this city, which the Board of Elections had said was just an example of really great enthusiasm and not anything to be annoyed about.
3 of the 4 machines at my precinct had broken down by the time I got there at 8:30.
Is that, imagine if we had something even close to full participation in any election in this country, like say even 60% of people voted, the entire system would break down. There wouldn't be an election. They would have to extend it, bring out the National Guard, like do elections in like fucking stadiums or something. There is no, this system is designed for people not to participate in it. If they participated in it, it would fucking break down.
It's because it's a republic, not a democracy, sir.
But part of that is because, like, this, in an off year where this, if you had told the Democrats this was going to happen, given this raw vote total before election, they say, oh, we're going to win 100 seats and get the Senate back. But it turns out that Trump has changed the math for midterms because his constant engagement of his followers, the rallies, the transparent fear-mongering, the controversy mongering, it worked. It energized them in a way that doesn't generally happen. Usually, if you win an election, your people, a lot of them anyway, just kind of stop paying attention. They feel like I won. They're not always aggrieved anymore because they're in charge. They kind of demobilize.
They're big boys in the big chair.
So they sort of like tune out a little bit and they lose their engagement on the issues and on politics. And that has not happened. They are fully engaged. They're going to be there every time. And that he literally has changed the map in that way. The reason, so you had a huge engagement of all the Republican base in a way that usually doesn't happen for the party in the presidency. Huge turnout for the Democratic base, which does usually happen in off years for this party that lost the presidency. The reason that you saw this big swing is because the suburbans, the people who were supposed to elect Hillary Clinton, did finally this time do the switch. The Chuck Schumer prediction that everyone makes fun of worked this time. And that's the big reason that they're in charge now, which means that this wave was sponsored by relatively well-off suburbanites who have no real interest in the kind of, you know, socialist Democratic Party that people think is the only hope for salvation for this country. And as a result, we don't have any, there's no reason to expect them to change that, to govern in any, to the left of any, in any way that compared to how they had right before.
And as Weigel said on the stream, the Panera Democrats came home.
They did.
Yeah.
And the Panera Democrats have no interest in shit like, I mean, maybe you can get along with Medicaid for All just as part of like a larger program that's, you know, grassroots and just sort of brings along people in its wake, but they're not going to be the spear point for anything. So you can kind of write off the House for anything other than maybe some subpoenas, which actually it'll be interesting to see if any of them are honored, because maybe they start doing the subpoenas that everybody's been hoping for all of that sweet oversight and investigation. And maybe the people in the White House just don't show up. And then what are they going to do? They go to what? The federal judiciary that's been stocked with like a fucking koi pond with Trump psychopaths for the past 2 years.
I can't wait for Trump to get subpoenaed and for him to show up in court in a wheelchair with a shirt that says fuck this court and an American flag fashioned into a diaper. Yeah. And then his fans will love that. But I mean, like to your point, Matt, about Panera Democrats, I thought another interesting thing, like a sort of subtext to this election, is that popular left wing, like broadly speaking, like more populist, like left ideas like Medicaid expansion or, for instance, reenfranchising felons in Florida, all did well. They did much better than any actual Democratic candidate did in those same states.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is very so I think the Democrats should just run just like a file, like stock image that says candidate and then candidate and his name is Medicare for All and like doesn't do any press or appearances and is just on the ballot as the name Medicare for All.
Yeah, like those guys who always change their name to lower taxes to try to run in local races.
Yeah, that's the problem is that the Democratic, to use an awful term, brand is dog shit basically everywhere. Among voters, among sort of ambiently conservative people who might be induced by material platform and by the people who have tuned out of voting.
I mean,
the people who are the only real hope for changing, you know, the electoral math in this country.
I was
who did not come out either, by the way, and that is still well off. And honestly, as I said, it's the only feasible path to electoral reform on any kind of, you know, anywhere on the scale that is necessary to stave off immediate disaster.
I was kind of wondering if at this point you could try to take up the like outsider mantle that someone like Donald Trump has popularized in the Republican Party and run as a Republican and be like, no, I'm the new kind of Republican here to break down systems and drain the swamp. And I am a Republican who stands for Medicare for all and like all these things that did well on the ballot. But just say, no, 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 I'm still a Republican, but I'm an outsider Republican now.
Well, the problem is that the social issues still are the thing that like divide people into the buckets. Like that's the thing that it's the cultural signifiers and the social issue stuff that gives people sort of that instant identification for which party they're in. And that's the kind of thing you can't really compromise on and honestly be a leftist, and which is a deal breaker for too many people to sort of peel off Republican voters. So there's no real hope there. The other big takeaway from the election is just that the Senate is going to be a huge problem, and honestly an insurmountable one, because it takes a smaller and smaller percentage of the U.S. population to block any meaningful reform now. Because these states are large, the states that are becoming older and whiter are going to become basically unreachable in terms of flipping Senate seats in the near future. And that means that getting even to 51, forget about 60, is going to be maybe impossible in the medium term, which is all we can really think of.
I mean, I think basically what I said when I came home on Tuesday night, like very early in the morning, I think basically holds true. Even, you know, if let's say DeSantis and Nelson and Abrams all win, which would be great, is that the Democrats did the thing that they were supposed to do at the bare minimum, which was take back the House. We said that was the chalk bet, you know, in our preview.
No, wait, what are you doing with this chalk?
I'm making a bet with chalk.
I'm kidding. I'm putting chalk.
No, they did the bare minimum of what they were expected to do, but if you were looking at this midterm election to be like that, that this is some kind of like strong headwind going into 2020, that like the Democrat, that the Trump is going to be a one-term president, or even, I'm sorry, that like this is evidence that a more hopeful future or a better future is on the way, I got to say, you got to be disappointed by this. Like, I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah, you have all it's shown is that the electorate as it has existed in the last generation, you know, rural whites, all of them being Republican, minorities largely being Democrat, and then urban educated whites sort of being the cherry on the top of the Democratic demographic sundae, that's not going anywhere. And then the 50% of people who don't vote, and most of whom have an economic interest in socialism, not engaged. And that is just a recipe for, yeah, the same sort of turnismo that we've had for the last 20 years of basically whatever party is in charge when the economy inevitably collapses after a bubble bursts, gets owned for a few years, and then the other one takes over until another bubble bursts, and then they get owned. There's no real hope for that ending in sight.
Like in 2010, right? That the Tea Party midterm election, that was a big wave.
The Republicans got the House. They didn't get the Senate till 2014.
So Obama's 2010 midterm election.
Yeah.
That was a bigger wave than this one.
In terms of absolute numbers.
In terms of absolute numbers.
He lost like 60 seats.
And keep in mind, Obama cruised to reelection pretty easily against Mitt Romney.
Yeah, no,
in 2012,
like
it was not that close. And by modern standards, it was not a close election.
Yeah,
who's back? I was so excited to remember that Mitt Romney was coming back as a senator this time, just because it felt like, you know, a classic season 3 character being written back in season 8 or something.
Yeah, no, the writers are getting real lazy for this bullshit. But
beautiful
white
bread cut out in the shape of a man, Mitt Romney.
You know, like we said, it's 2020 season starts the day after the midterm elections. And what am I seeing now? Again, don't know how seriously to take this, but we keep hearing rumblings that Chill Dog is coming back in 2020.
Yeah, Mark Penn.
Chill Dog is going to return. She's going to take another shot at this in 2020.
I mean, that's according to Mark Penn, who is a old-timey patent medicine salesman.
Yeah.
he just got done selling lightning rods to rubes at a county fair and then wrote out a thing for the Wall Street Journal about how she's coming back. So take that with the entire fucking ocean of salt. But, I mean, Her actions have indicated that she wants another bite at the apple.
I have already bet Virgil $100 that she will run in 2020.
I can't imagine her ego allowing her not to. Like, how is she going to allow that be her last gasp, getting owned by Donald fucking Trump? I mean, it's inconceivable that she would allow that to happen. And the thing is you can say, oh, she'd be an idiot to try. How would she doesn't she have any kind of, basic awareness? No, she lives in an armed compound surrounded by a bunch of fucking yes men and grifters who want a giant slab of the huge fucking money pie that she's going to be able to easily get from all of the awful, corrupt Democratic donors. So all of them are telling her she has a shot. They have no fucking incentive to tell her the truth. It really is. It's like the end of Downfall. They're not going to fucking tell her that their armies got destroyed on the fucking Vistula or whatever. They're going to want to be like, no, we can take Moscow. Just give me a few $100 million and I'll give you all the charts and graphs that show how you can win in Ohio. By the way, another thing we learned is that Ohio is just going to be a red state now. Ohio is trending away from even being a swing state anymore. That was one state that had no blue wave at all, except of course for Sherrod Brown.
Well, what do you make of Sherrod Brown though?
Sherrod Brown, he is like one of those old fashioned labor Dems. He's not like as far left as Bernie, and he endorsed Hillary during the primary, which I've heard actually kind of really hurt Bernie's feelings because he kind of thought if anyone in the Senate was going to endorse him, it would have been Sherrod Brown, mm-hmm. but he didn't do it. So he's got that careerism in him to not have, gone with mm-hmm. the obvious superior choice for workers. But his labor record is very good. And he's got this raspy voice, and he's got, he dresses in these big grumpled suits, and he's got that sort of Bernie-esque presentation of earnestness and care for the working man that sort of overcomes the Democratic branding.
Do you think more people should be talking about him for 2020? As like a possible solution?
I honestly still think Bernie's the only choice. I really do. I think he's the only choice. I know he's a million years old. And I know that every fucking Democrat is going to have knives out for him. But I just don't. The closest thing to another alternative is Sherrod Brown. He hasn't really given indication that he's going to run. And if he did, he would just cannibalize Bernie's base. And honestly, I don't even see a place where he would do anything else other than deny both of them a chance at the nomination.
I mean, it's 2 years away, but just talking about this with you guys now, I just have this horrible vision that like almost Adam Curtis, like that, like this, like Bernie and Hillary will both run again. Hillary will beat Bernie and then lose to Trump. And then just this feeling that like politics have now just become like our culture and that they're just remakes, like that we're not producing anything new mm-hmm. at all. And we're just sort of doomed to sort of relive like fucking like the guy in Memento or something, that we're just doomed to relive the same shit over and over and over again.
He's,
because
he's
like
flapping off a Polaroid of Hillary Clinton that says,
don't
do
believe
not trust
her lies. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that we just like that we're just doomed to like repeat literally the same things over and over again. And we like, we can't change or just literally imagine anything different.
Yeah. No. It's just the structural impediments to first a left takeover of the Democrats, and then if that were to happen, a left Democrat takeover of the handles of power in at the federal level are just huge, and they could happen hypothetically, but just not on any kind of reasonable time scale given the ecological condition of this planet. I know that elections they take up a lot of brain space because of the way that politics is structured and the way that we deal with it in this country. And it's hard to sort of, take your eyes away from it because it is such a spectacle and it has so many elements of horse race, projection and
entertainment
that make it really, really fascinating. But I honestly think that its efficacy in the near term is pretty minimal. So it's hard to say that because I honestly don't have a lot of alternative ideas, but I think one thing we should take away from this is that, this sort of gridlock and just metronomic back and forth seems to be the near term reality. And as a result, people are going to have to start organizing more outside of electoralism, not give it up, obviously, keep trying to fight where you can, because there are a lot of great local, especially local results in this election. But you know, we're going to have to figure out a way to mitigate the worst of what's coming. And we can't depend on the government for it.
And again, some of the most hopeful spots were the ballot measures on the ballots that came through. That is a new way to think about these things, like the re-enfranchisement in Florida. If that had taken place before this election, Gillum would probably be handily the governor.
Yeah. No, there were, but and for the most part, the ballot measures were encouraging on some things, Medicare being a good one. Even in Utah, Medicaid expansion went through, or Medicaid rather, and but the, you know, there were some bad results. Measure B obviously failed in L.A., but also in California, the measure to repeal the ban on rent control failed, which is a blow to anybody being able to live in that state. Parts of it that aren't burned down anyway.
Yeah.
And maybe that's going to take care of high rents.
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
Well, the YIMBYs keep saying that all we need is just new housing stock. We need more housing stock. So maybe these wildfires will just destroy enough old housing stock that they'll just have to build and build and build.
Yeah.
And they'll just get rid of all zoning laws because of the fires. The fires got rid of the zoning.
Yes.
People.
Yeah.
We did cover on election night the Measure C in San Francisco did win.
Yes.
Basically tax all the rich people in that fucking city to deal with their homeless situation in a slightly reasonable way.
Yeah. And the other one, the one that really depresses me the most is that Colorado had a huge Democratic wave. They were sort of the opposite. They're honestly the opposite of Ohio in that they were kind of a red state. They turned into a swing state. And now they just look like they're going to swap Ohio and just become now a blue
legal
state.
Weed.
I think that did it. It just, you know,
if we could just get everybody tuned up, that's what we need. We need to start putting CBD in the water supply.
It's going
to
be like
and just make America tuned out. And then, like,
scientists have proven conclusively that the consumption of THC destroys the part of one's brain that appreciates individual liberty. It encourages socialism and collectivism.
I'm just imagining, like, you know, like Tammany Hall, New York, instead of all the boss tweeds minions handing out like pints of whiskey to the voters to vote for them. It's just huge spliffs for all the
pre-rolled spliffs. Yeah.
So they had a huge Democratic wave. They basically washed out Republicans at, like, from the local level on up, and they banned forced labor in prisons now, which is good. They did
got around to that.
They did nonpartisan district redistricting, which a lot of states did, but they voted down the anti-fracking measure, and.
Well, the most insane thing about that is that they got on the ballot like an anti-fracking measure that would essentially like regulate fracking in such a way that like it would be not profitable to do it because you couldn't, for instance, you know, drill for natural gas like next to a school
or any inhabited dwelling,
or you know, like next to like, you know, water that people drink. And the fucking oil and natural gas industry got a fucking another ballot measure on the fucking thing that would cover their ass in case the people voted to pass this regulation on fracking.
Yeah, they would have gotten basically a taxpayer bailout for having.
They got another ballot measure that essentially said the state of Colorado would have to pay them for any future profits they theoretically could have made.
Yeah,
that would have been lost had this measure been passed.
And both measures failed.
So
basically they
just
said.
It's a moot point. Yeah.
Those voters were like, well, just forget about it. Which, you know. The stuff in the ground has to stay there, man. I mean, if we're not going to all die, the shit that's in the ground, the fucking natural gas, the oil that's in the ground now, it has to stay there.
Well, forget thinking long term. And by long term, I mean like 10 to 15 years in the future.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, like, how do you like drinking water? Do you like having water that comes out of your
tap?
But the
thing is that how do you argue against something that makes everybody money, you know? And that's a tough problem even for socialists who want to pitch to people's material interests. A fracking company giving you money for natural gas that's on your property, giving you a royalty for the rest of your life, that's someone's material interest. And how do you make up for that with some sort of hypothetical problem about, oh, you know, your tap water is going to be on fire and, oh, we're all going to fucking cook to death in 20 years. That just doesn't have the immediacy of a paycheck. Of a royalty check every month. And I don't know how you beat that. I don't know how you beat the economic imperative to fucking pry every goddamn ounce of that shit out of the ground and into the air.
Well, let's put a pin in that one, in that discussion. And here's a bit of another bright spot from the election is Orange County Congressman Dana Rohrabacher finally lost. You all remember Dana Rohrabacher. He's sort of like the chill, like ice surfing Republican. Like he wears puka shell necklaces. Yeah.
He loves the shroom too. He's pro weed. And he is the one member of Congress who you could legitimately make an argument is like literally a Putin agent in his, like, he loves Russia, goes there all the time. Other Republicans in the Congress joke about him being
Also in the 80s, he was a big, he was a big fan of the Contras in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he would go on like junkets where he like, you know, would pose with them, like, you know, wielding machetes or whatever. And he's just like, they're fighting for freedom.
Yeah.
Just cool. Like our founding fathers.
Yep. He actually proposed a piece of legislation in Congress that during the 80s to authorize the transmission of the Konami code to Nicaragua to give them infinite lives.
A, B, select and start. That's what defeated the Sandinistas.
Up, down, left, right, B, A, B, A.
So Rohrabacher finally lost, and Brendan actually sent me this article from the OC Weekly back in 2013, and it is quite extraordinary. It's called "Dana Rohrabacher is Dirty," and I want to read this.
Hey,
this
dirty, baby, I got your money.
this article is quite extraordinary. Again, this is from 2013, and I'm just reading here. It says, when Congressman Dana Tyrone Rohrabacher moved into a four-bedroom, four-bathroom, million-dollar Costa Mesa rental home on April Fool's Day 2010, the immaculate 6,300 square-foot property could have been featured in a glossy real estate magazine. Built in 1948, the two-story Orange Avenue home had been updated in recent years for comfort and style. The carpeting was new, appliances worked, and walls were spotless. Thriving flowers, plants, and grass adorn the idyllic backyard less than 4 miles from the Pacific Ocean. But it's now understandable why Orange County's senior career politician secretly changed the locks and refused to allow homeowner Robert Polyanik inside for an annual inspections. When he moved out in August 2012, Rohrabacher left behind a shockingly horrific pigsty, a dump worse than a college fraternity house of unhygienic slobs unfamiliar with the most basic tools of cleaning. Darlene Witzel, Polyanik's longtime girlfriend, entered the home shortly after the congressman's departure and wept at the scene. It was disgusting, she said. It was unbelievable. Who lives like that? Massive black stains and muck covered the carpet throughout the home.
Oh, God.
Sticky grime encased damage, rusted appliances, denied water once thriving outside plants and grass dried up and died. Blinds were cracked. Black dirt ruined the appearance of the once sparkling tile floors. Walls inexplicably contained odd holes, nail polish, wax, and some smelly substance that may have been feces.
Jesus.
Every toilet seat in the house was broken.
All right, I can relate to that. I feel you, Dana. I've done that a few times.
It goes on. The ceilings showed smoke damage. Light switches had been cracked. Clumps of hair and remnants of what may have been balloons or some other rubbery material clogged sinks. Cracked, scarred doors. Thick, solidified grease rendered the air suction vent above the kitchen stove useless.
Jesus.
Bathroom towel bars were missing, and vanities suffered water damage. A second floor suite used by Dana's wife, Rhonda, as her bedroom contained a huge, mysterious, lubricant-like stain, something you might expect on the floor of a Hollywood sex club, had seeped through the thick carpet and padding to tarnish a hardwood floor.
Oh my God.
The dishwasher wasn't functioning, a wooden chair in the backyard had been crushed, and phone lines were strangely severed.
What?
An overflowing tub cracked a ceiling with water damage, and no joke, white maggots squirmed underneath the kitchen stove that may have not have ever been cleaned during Rohrabacher's $3,350 per month occupancy, which was secured in part with character reference
from
OC Congressman Ed Royce, John Campbell, and Ken Calvert. Paid invoices showed widespread damage totaled more than $25,800, according to records reviewed by The Weekly. Polyanik deducted the $6,700 security deposit and sent the congressman a bill for the remainder. But Rohrabacher, 66 years old and known even in friendly Republican circles for miserly inclinations, even though his family's known income easily tops $250,000 annually before counting lucrative congressional benefits, steadfastly ignored seven of his ex-landlord's polite communications.
Yeah, no, that's the Steve Bannon home decorating style right there. All I need is the acid-burned jacuzzi to go with it. It sounds like he was doing saw shit.
Yes, yeah.
Like people were waking up with electrified dog collars on and Rohrabacher's coming over the PA like, I want to play a game.
If you were to give me a $10 million budget to create a scene in a movie that was a failed summoning sequence for a great old one, I don't think I could do a better job than that.
That's amazing.
Is there any way we can prove at this point that every nationally elected or national level elected Republican official does not secrete a kind of black ichor wherever they go?
They all look like fucking Pigpen, just walking around with the giant stink lines coming off of them.
Perhaps it's good that Felix wasn't able to be on this one because maybe Rohrabacher would have a defender.
Yeah, he'd be like, hold on a minute. Maybe he was gaming really hard. He just couldn't do any of this bullshit. He's got a lot of stuff on it. He's got a lot of minis to collect. Give him a break.
So check this out. Rohrabacher believes that he is the victim
of course,
all of this.
Of course he does.
And he wants Polyanik, his former landlord, to pay him $20,000 for not refunding his security deposit in a timely manner.
That is fucking Republican ideology in a nutshell. The man who created the stink cavern goes, I have been wronged. Like that, they're just walking around aggrieved for no reason. That's the Republican ideology writ large.
Some Antifa-style goons broke into my rental and unloaded a 55-gallon drum of sex lube right onto the floor.
Oh, one other good thing from election night that I sadly, for some reason, wasn't able to notice when it happened. Fucking Scott Walker lost.
Woo!
Yes.
The one thing I actually really cared about, that fucking piece of shit. Go back to the fucking Goosebumps cover, you fucking goblins. God bless America. That motherfucker is gone. In 2 years, when you say Scott Walker, everyone will know you're talking about the noise musician. They're not going to ask because he's done for. He'll go. He'll get some fucking. He'll like burrow into one of the Koch brothers' thoraxes and just live there like Quado. And he will never be seen again. Thank fucking God.
I think best possible future for Scott Walker is to become a lobbyist for the ham industry.
Yes, he honestly should be out there every day.
Their greatest advocate.
Just knocking on every member of Congress who works in the agricultural committee going, have you considered ham subsidies?
Scott Walker's loss is something that it was close, and I attribute it entirely to our decision on Monday to release a bonus episode featuring
absolutely.
Our yes. roast of him in Madison, Wisconsin.
People heard it, and they're like, I can't vote for this
fucking
guy.
His god-awful book, Unintimidated, about his years as governor, taking on those greedy public sector unions.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, that
bon
is
chance, Scotty, you fucking maggot.
His brave war against the will of the Wisconsin people.
He is now taking a job cleaning Dana Rohrabacher's rental properties.
Yes.
And he's like,
taking the skills he learned power washing the precious dome.
He comes in every day with a thermos of warm milk and two ham sandwiches. And he's like, I'm a lunch pail type house cleaner. I come to work every day cleaning up all the black mold, cum, shit, blood. And
I will not be intimidated by this mysterious hair.
And the black oil from the X-Files. It's just seeping into his pores.
He'll have the exact same dialogue as the cleaning lady played by Terry Jones in Monty Python's Meaning of Life.
Speaking of ballot measures and Republican mindset, here's another thing. This is from a couple weeks ago, but I read this article and it really summed up for me like so much of American culture and like the politics that it breeds. And I'm speaking, of course, now this measure failed in Georgia, but you may have read of this piece about this town in Georgia that basically it's become a very, it's like growing in population and they film a lot of movies there. It's become sort of like the Southern Hollywood because of a lot of tax breaks. It's called Stockbridge, Georgia. And basically, they were voting on Election Day to resegregate their town.
Yeah.
They wanted to, it's a town that just elected its first black mayor and has an all-black city council. And the white residents of the town were basically got on the ballot a measure to split the city in two between the white part and the black part, and basically take away all of the tax base of the white part. And essentially, they were doing this so they could get a Cheesecake Factory and a P.F. Chang's. I'm reading here from this.
Well, that's what they said.
Yeah, that's what they said.
It's just interesting seeing how the goalposts move over the years, because for a long time it was all about schools, and now it's literally about chain restaurants.
But what I mean is, like, this is essentially...
Well, in another 10 years, our chain restaurants will be our school.
Yeah.
Oh, where'd
you
go to high school? Oh, Cheesecake 11.
It says, white residents are hoping to split the city in two, creating a new majority white town known as Eagle's Landing.
Oh, God.
The community in recent years has become a hotbed of activity for film production companies and is often referred to as Hollywood South. If you watch the movie Black Panther, you will recognize the area upon visiting it, as it served for a shooting location for the popular film. White citizens recently enacted a plan to split the city into two, taking the most valuable parts of Stockbridge for their own.
And kind of put a force field around it that disguises the techno-utopia that is encased within.
City Lab reports that residents are upset that the community is mostly attracting Bojangles and Waffle Houses.
Both great.
When they
delicious!
Want, yes. When they want cheesecake...
I'd kill for a fucking Bojangles around here!
When they want Cheesecake Factory or P.F. Chang's type establishments to move
so
into the area.
So basically, they want to pay more for less good food. That's what they want.
The Daily Kos notes that the Committee of Privileged White People was meeting at a country club to discuss their plans. The plan was hatched when the woman running the campaign realized the average income of residents in the area was not high enough to attract the businesses she wanted in the area. What is most troubling is that the Eagle's Landing plan calls for volunteers to essentially steal the business district that already exists, leaving Stockbridge residents with a massive loss of sales and property taxes. Residents didn't believe state officials would allow the measure to reach the ballot, but that's exactly what happened. In the area's white affluent voters pass, the measure Eagle's Landing will feature six-figure income and a business district that was built from the ground up with help from the largely black community. Even though Stockbridge residents won't be allowed to vote on the measure unless they are in the Eagle's Landing area, it will be their community that is torn apart, essentially an annexation of their rightfully owned city.
Oh, my God.
So
Eagle's Landing, was Iron Cross Georgia already taken?
So that measure did not pass, weirdly, considering it was only the people in Eagle's Landing that would be voting
honestly,
on it.
Honestly, kind of encouraging that they did not vote to recreate segregation so that they could have overpriced wontons.
The phrase blood and soil was not polling well, so they changed it to blood and cheesecake, but that just didn't have the direct appeal that they were hoping
for.
No,
but I read that article, and like it just really made me like think that, like, it really summed up a lot of me, like, what our politics is really all about, who the people who vote in our elections, like, what they're really thinking about, what they want politics to achieve for them. And it is that they want to create, like, you know, these all-white suburban enclaves that don't have to pay a single dime of taxes for anyone outside of their little, like, domed city.
The
or
villages.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yes. They want to recreate the village. The village is their utopia. It's their model of the future.
They don't want a single dime of the taxes, the property or sales taxes they pay going to anything like, you know, public transit or education for anyone that isn't their kids. And I got to say, like, it's not couched in these terms, but this is literally, like, this is the ethno-state shit that, like, alt-right people are obsessed with.
Yes.
They don't conceive of it in those terms, but this is what they want to do. They want essentially an a la carte taxation system in which, like, what little in taxes they do pay goes to things exclusively that serve them and only them. And by them, I mean their kin and kind and other well-to-do white people.
Right. And what basically, this is... When you're a rung down from the ultra wealthy who are able to do this stuff unilaterally,
exactly,
they don't have to worry about redrawing
any
lines
and doing
ballot measures and you know, any of that bullshit. They just keep their money out of range of public revenuers and recreate private infrastructure by themselves, because that's the glory of having that much money. When you're a little bit lower on the economic rung, you have to still do this kind of stuff, but the idea is still the same. As I said, I think a few weeks ago, it is how one of the big things that ended the Roman Empire is that, local rich people, local people, you know, at the Latifundia, people who owned large estates, just stopped sending people to the army and stopped sending tax revenue up and started building walls around their little things and saying, no, I got this. And that's what we're seeing that recreated here at everywhere above like the top, you know, like 10% people are doing that. And yeah, it's only going to get more prevalent over time. I do think it's funny, though, and very revealing, and honestly should even be an embarrassment to like the white nationalist types who see this kind of thing as a model and have, you know, like Roman fucking busts as their avatars on Twitter and post nothing but pictures of columns and are like,
this and are is obsessed how, with eagles.
Yeah, this is how things should be. This is the fucking white Western culture that you're defending. It has nothing to do with any of these ancient verities. It's fucking Cheesecake Factory.
And P.F. Chang's.
It's P.F. Chang's. It's this ersatz, corporatized, poured concrete, cheap-ass recreation of things that you never even experienced. It's somebody else's dream of somebody else's dream of a culture, and you're getting just it covered in fucking MSG and high fructose corn syrup. And that's the fucking culture that you're willing to kill, what? Three quarters of the world population to maintain. Just think of the fucking psychotic, awful heart of anyone who is motivated by that to see all that death as like grimly necessary, not something you necessarily want to, you know, celebrate, but something that must be done for the good of the culture. And this is what it is.
Well, this
is a fucking Cheesecake Factory.
Like, these are the people, like, you know, like even like the intelligent racists who will be like, you know, like people like Andrew Sullivan or whatever, yeah, who are like, you know, we should, you know, like, you know, Trump is a demagogue, but like, you know, people on the left who poo-poo, you know, concerns about immigration or whatever are playing into his hands. You know, we should speak to the fears of people who are like afraid of the caravan, mm-hmm, because, you know, it's a real issue. Like, you know, what happens when, you know, Western culture or American culture changes? And I'm like, fucking good. Let's, dude, our culture is dog shit.
It's awful.
Our culture is terrible. And when I say our culture,
it barely even, it's calling it a culture is a fucking yeah, insult to that concept.
And like, here's the thing, like, American culture, like as a whole, still does like carries a lot of weight in the world, and that like we set popular culture for the world,
yeah,
largely. But like, anything that is valuable in our culture, I'm sorry, is not being produced by white suburbanites.
No,
like when we talk about like white American culture, there is no culture.
They don't. Well, that's
these
the thing
people
is,
would rather have fucking Cheesecake Factory than breathable air or drinkable water in the next 30
and they
years.
Don't produce and they, any they, culture. Yeah, yeah. They produce nothing. They consume. They consume fucking Minions t-shirts and ISIS Hunter fucking
bumper stickers Ford
and
F-150s
cheesecake.
And yeah, Ford F-150s and a shitload of guns.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't think this culture is worth preserving. They it's our democratic culture that's worth preserving. These people don't believe in democracy.
No.
We just explicitly told you they're trying to like literally annex territory for themselves so they don't have to like live and share any property with like black people.
The governors of two states and the president of the United States are currently in public carrying out an attempt to steal fucking three elections. There's nothing but contempt for democracy. All they want is the freedom to consume garbage,
dog shit food,
idiot television, shitty movies, and fucking petrochemicals. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah. So yeah, like again, so if you're looking at, you know, 5,000 people fleeing warfare and horrible, immiserating conditions that largely this country is responsible for.
Oops.
In Central America, trying to enter a nation of what, 320 million people?
Yeah.
God, I just don't know if we can handle another 5,000 people in this country.
Yeah, I know. I don't think we
can.
And
like
do
what?
It.
That these people are looking for like a job or so, just anything, because their way of life has been uprooted by horrible global capitalism. They're going to come to America and they're going to change our culture by, I don't know, introducing food that isn't awful.
Look, if they come here, we're no longer going to have a melting pot. By that, I mean the chain fund.
I will not stand idly by and see this nation's Fuddruckers turned into taquieras.
Anything that's you know, bearable or interesting about American culture is not being produced by these people.
Nothing is being produced by these people.
Yeah.
They don't produce culture. They just consume a corporate fucking monetized just gravy pipe of shit. It's like it, all of American culture. It's like that Simpsons episode where they go to the Duff fucking brewery and all the different flavors are coming out of one pipe. That's it. Yeah. But all the pipe, it's like the food, the beverage, the television. It's all just a corporate shit. And the funny thing is these Nazi guys see that. Mm-hmm. And they're like horrified by it too.
Yeah,
like, but they somehow think that their fellow whites in these in these places are going to somehow rise up against this commodified, awful, corporate monoculture. Even, like they don't love it more than life itself.
Well, even those people, like the people who have marble bust avatars.
Well, yeah, they're full of fucking shit.
Well, they're full of shit. If you ask any one of those people who like, you know, has like hashtag defend Western civilization or whatever from... you know, from people in Central America or immigrants or whatever, like ask them what their favorite symphony is and watch their fucking gormless shithead slack-jawed face just go, buh.
No, the one from Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
My favorite moment of that ever, and this is a year ago now, is that there was a thread where one of these fucking mutants posted this picture of a statue. And he said, this is the culture we're trying to preserve. And he got owned immediately because somebody pointed out it was actually made by an Asian woman.
Oh, and, yeah. No, it was a statue. It was like a marble statue of like, you know, like a woman
in a diaphanous, in a like sort of clingy dress,
like a classic, like representational, right. Like looked realistic. And he was like, this is Western civilization. And it was actually a Chinese American woman right. sculptor.
And everyone was owning him for that. And I feel like that sort of missed the even bigger point, which says the fucking statue is dog shit. The statue is basically just a fucking marble real doll. Like, there's nothing to it. It's just, look, a sexy lady, and it's hard. It's like impressed by the technical skill of like making stone look like fabric. It's like, that's fine, but like just looking at that and being like, I'll kill 3/4 of the world population for this. Your brain is a dog's brain.
And you know, whenever I think about whether it's Eagle's Landing or The Villages or any of this shit. Matt, I think you've seen it. Have you ever, you know the movie A Boy and His Dog?
Oh yeah, Don Johnson. It's like Jason Robards.
Yeah, classic. This post-apocalyptic movie where Don Johnson is this sort of like teenage wanderer through this like post-nuclear hellscape.
Yep.
And eventually he gets kidnapped by basically the underground version of The Villages led by Jason Robards, where they've used robots to recreate this kind of like 1950s
it's like
suburban,
new Wichita or something.
Yeah, this 1950s suburban existence, and they want to get him so that they can literally milk his sperm and create more like apple cheeked young lads.
Yeah, because
they're
DNA's
all like
too
weird
fucked
old
up
men.
By radiation. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, check out A Boy and His Dog, directed by IQ Jones, the Sam Peckinpah.
LQ
Jones?
LQ.
Oh, LQ Jones.
IQ
Jones.
His much smarter brother, IQ Jones.
The Sam, the much known Sam Peckinpah, like
from Wild
actor.
Bunch, based on a Harlan Ellison short story.
Anyway, Boy and His Dog, very good movie. Lastly, though, we're talking about, you know, observations on American culture today, and I want to go to someone who has cast his glance at American culture
his gimlet
abroad,
eye
from abroad. The Alexis de Tocqueville of the modern era.
He literally thinks of himself.
Yeah, no, I know.
He wrote a book explicitly making that comparison.
I'm talking, of course, about Bernard Henri Lévy. Bernard Henri Lévy, if you're not familiar, is an incredibly full of shit French public intellectual.
Oh,
a self-described public intellectual who's mainly known for never buttoning his shirt up and showing off his like bird-like chest to anyone.
Like the French like to look down on America because we really don't have those guys for the most part. And exactly. You
good.
Can own any of them by saying, if that is what a public intellectual is, no thanks. I'll take fucking Terry Bradshaw talking about this week's fucking lineup of games on NFL Sunday over that guy as our version of a public intellectual.
He's he considers himself like a defender of liberal society, but of course he has not met a single U.S.-backed military intervention
that
he didn't back. He supported the Libya intervention after the Iraq war.
He thought it was going to be a great idea. He talked to Hillary Clinton about it, helped convince her to convince Obama to do it, and then they brought slavery back, so well done.
So, can I interest you in a Bernard Henri Lévy one-man show currently being seen at the Public Theater in New York?
Wait a minute, this is in New York?
Yes.
Ooh. Okay, we're getting to this. No price too high for this.
Can I interest you, though, in a review of French public intellectual and Alexis de Tocqueville wannabe, Bernard-Henri Lévy's one-man show called Looking for Europe, reviewed by young James Kirchick.
You know, I normally would be worried with spoilers since I absolutely will be seeing this, but it's Jamie Kirchick. How can you not read a Jamie Kirchick
column? This is Jamie Kirchick writing in Tablet. Looking for Europe, finding America adrift. Bernard-Henri Lévy's one-man show, Looking for Europe, makes the case that America makes for the case for America better than most Americans ever do. Sometimes it takes
because it doesn't have Bernard-Henri Lévy in it.
Sometimes it takes a foreigner to remind you of America's promise and potential. This is certainly one of those times.
Mm-hmm.
Watching Bernard-Henri Lévy perform his one-man, one-night-only show. Oh no! Oh no! He's wait. How can it be a one-man show if he's only doing it one night? That's just a lecture.
Yeah. Yeah.
Watching his one-night-only show, Looking for Europe.
Can you imagine the crowd at that thing? Whew.
Yeah,
just gave myself
a lot of
the chills.
Bernard cosplayers, people showing up with the shirt unbuttoned, the two bottom buttons done, and then everything just like He-Man just wafting open.
Just scalpers out front. Yeah. I got two.
So he said, when I saw BHL perform his one-man, one-night-only show, Looking for Europe, Monday night at the Public Theater, I thought I witnessed the flash of Thomas Jefferson. It wasn't only the perfectly coiffed bouffon permanently sported by the celebrity French intellectual which precipitated this momentary sense.
Wait a minute. Is he saying that Bernard-Henri Lévy has a wig? Because yes. That's sort of the big thing about those dudes. They love wigs.
That wasn't Thomas Jefferson's actual hair.
Yeah.
Precipitated this momentary sense of synthesis with the most francophile of the American founders.
Not the only kind of file he was.
Felix isn't here, but I know that's what he would be chiming in with. Over the course of an hour and 45 minutes.
Oh, God.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
No theater should be longer than 90 minutes.
Lévy made the case for America, its meaning, its values, its purpose in the world better than most Americans ever do. With their way of coming together around the love of flag of a constitution.
Who amongst us does not enjoy the NASCAR?
And basically an idea. Okay, I'm not going to do the French accent anymore.
You just imagine it in your
just
mind.
Just imagine
house.
It, Lévy.
Yeah, every word is in that voice.
Lévy proclaimed, the Americans represent everything that the European advocates of the nation rooted in soil, race, and blood detest. Less and less so, Bernard, yes. I gotta say.
Yes, we're kind of coming around on those ideas.
I don't know if you noticed who's president right
also,
now.
Also, they were all there.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Alas, the call is coming from inside the house.
Yeah, and then Jamie says, alas, there are many Americans who share this conception of the nation, and they happen to be in power. Oh, okay, thanks for acknowledging that, Jamie. Maybe you can vote for Trump again in 2020. But Looking for Europe is the latest version of a show Lévy originally performed at Sarajevo's National Theater in 2014 called Hotel Europe, and has since presented in Odessa, Venice, Paris, and London, among other places.
I really hope that it was presented in the form of a farce where each character was in a different room representing a ruling ideology of Europe over the last several centuries. They all like came out and tried to solve the murder of a butler or something.
This is also really funny for Kirchick, of course, who is, you know, mainly a partisan of, you know, Israel and America.
Yeah.
Like that's pretty much what defines the limits of his politics, is what party in power can do the most for Netanyahu's government. And he's like, you know, holding up this banner of like, you know, we believe in liberty as an ideal more than, you know, race or soil or tradition. This must be inconvenient for him at a time when Netanyahu is literally like shaking hands and closing up with Viktor Orban in Hungary.
And legally defining Israel as an ethnostate. Oops.
Lévy, who in 2006 barnstormed across our fruited plain to produce the rollicking travelogue, American Vertigo. American Vertigo. God, just imagine him just smelling his own, just
oh, yeah.
smelling his farts in a wine glass and going, wee wee, oh, this fart I smell and notes of a Thomas Jefferson shit.
Yeah, that book was absolutely destroyed in a review by Garrison Keillor of all time.
Yeah.
That's a great review. And when you get just owned by that fucking snooze, That guy who spent the last 30 years nose whistling into a microphone on NPR, and he just goes beast mode on you. No, that's how bad you fucked up.
Like, Garrison Keillor can write, though, and when he's on, he's on.
Yeah.
And I remember that review. It was fantastic because, well, you know, he is a guy who has been, you know, channeling the middle American Minnesota ethos to have this French asshole come in and try to do his, like, you know, polite musings on American culture is just vomitous. So he says, Bernard, BHL is unabashedly pro-American in the best sense, in that he admires the idea of America, when the country fails, as it often does and is doing, to live up to its promise.
America fails, but its drone program never does.
America is Europe saved and relaunched, Levy declared. So America's the save point that Europe did before it fucked up the two world wars. If only they could just go back to that restart point and then fast travel to the Treaty of Versailles. So an inveterate name dropper, Levy recalled his relationship with the socialite and former American ambassador to Paris, Pamela Harriman, in whose residence he watched, alongside NATO Supreme Allied Commander Wesley Clark and the diplomat Richard Holbrooke, the NATO planes saving Sarajevo at last.
Jeez, that only this motherfucker could consider that name dropping.
Was it
the Patricia Heriflam?
If Levy cannot countenance the nationalist xenophobic right, so too is he fed up with the increasingly illiberal and parochial left.
Mm.
When Levy and his comrades manned the barricades of Paris in 1968, "We are all German Jews," was the cry, their rallying cry of solidarity with the world's oppressed. Today, he bemoans, the agenda of the Western left is all about terroir and local cheeses. What the fuck is he talking about? The agenda of the internet of the Western left is about local cheeses?
I think he's thinking about a good Camembert.
Mm.
I think he's talking about sort of the idea that I think that the left is just defined by sort of hostility to monoculture, like we were talking about.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the idea to have like artisanal local stuff. And once again, he's probably if you're talking about a certain strain of like urban liberalism, that's probably true. But once again, you know, that's just the people he hangs out with.
I'm mostly interested in the mouthfeel of today's left.
Envisioning a morally upended future where a president, Marion Maréchal Le Pen, entombs the ashes of Vichy collaborator Philippe Pétain in the Hotel des Invalides.
Wait a minute.
Didn't that just happen?
He didn't do that, but Macron did fucking honor Pétain.
That's true.
He did it! His guy did that!
So keep in mind that Kerchick is describing this as like a fascinating and really entertaining show. Levy asked, hypothetically, why the remains of De Gaulle, Lloyd Byron, and Winston Churchill should not be removed from their places of national honor, and whether America ought not return John McCain to Hanoi.
Good. That'd
yes,
be awesome.
That would rule.
They should fucking... I hope they didn't fucking cremate him, because they should put his ass like as an animatronic bear at like the fucking Hanoi Chuck E. Cheese, who comes every hour and apologizes in a song playing a banjo for fucking murdering those people.
Next spring, imagine watching this shit, a one-man show featuring this unbearably pretentious asshole name-dropping General Wesley Clark and be like, this is what America is about. This guy sees America more than the actual people who live here. Next spring, in the run-up to the European Parliament elections, Levy plans to take his show on the road to 20 European cities. It will be challenging territory, hoping to capitalize upon the recent advances they have made in national parliaments. Right-wing populist parties across Europe are expected to increase their presence in the body. At their side will be Steve Bannon, freed from Trump's employ to wreak his mad vision upon the old continent. If Levy sticks to custom and rewrites the script for each locale, addressing the local personalities and idiosyncrasies of Berlin to Budapest, it will be an impressive feat. To be honest, that sounds like what we do when we're on the road for Chapo Trump House. Give a little local flavor from Pittsburgh to Minneapolis.
This motherfucker honestly thinks that what's going to stem the tide
of neo-fascism.
The surge of fascism in Europe is this fucking dingus, this bare-chested, pretentious dickhead, this guy who's just like a combination of like Charlie Rose and Madeleine Albright wandering around Europe and being like, no, we are better than this. That is the most delusional thing I think I've ever heard. More so than Hillary running in 2020. This is breathtaking.
Okay.
This is how... just think of how fucked liberalism is.
Yeah.
How utterly...
With the avatars.
It is completely collapsed. It has no popular legitimacy, and the only ideas these people have for getting it back is, well, I will go before them, before the richest of them, of course, who can afford to see my humancheur, and I will remind them of liberty, and then they will not be fascist anymore. It's like, we're fucking doomed. But because honestly, what's terrifying about this is that, like, right now, they literally are the only thing standing between us and the resurgent, right? Because the left is still too fucking weak.
I just want to underscore again that both BHL and Jamie Kirchick were huge supporters of the Iraq War and still are to this day.
Of course.
I mean, they're in favor of, you know, basically...
Yeah. Every military adventure that just laid a fucking wrecking ball to the Middle East and unleashed all kinds of horrors across the entire world.
And Henri Lévy and Kirchick, of course, did it because they're such good liberals. And they wanted to bring freedom
and democracy. Because they love
the values.
The values. They wanted to be exported.
They wanted to bring the idea of America to Baghdad, Libya, and Yemen.
The depleted uranium values of the West needed to be exported.
This honestly reminds me of the thing from the other week where Frum debated Bannon on the values of liberalism and converted the audience to Bannon's point of view.
I joked about this. Apparently the Monk debates fucked up the voting on this.
Oh, great.
And they did like...
The PricewaterhouseCooper guys didn't tell.
This is what Frum is claiming and his supporters. I'm not sure I believe it, but I'm willing to print the legend and say that David Frum is such an unappealing worm that he convinced a room full of people who were once sympathetic with him just to become open fascists just by dint of how awful he is.
Yes. And
so they're saying that he actually won the debate or whatever. I don't fucking care one way or the other.
Yeah.
I really don't.
No. It doesn't matter. That's all a jack off anyway. Like, who's going to this fucking debates to watch these moldering cretins talk to each other? It's just people who literally have nothing better to do with their lives.
No. So here's the final paragraph. It's all been leading to this because this is maybe the most concentrated paragraph of pure brain cancer that I think I've maybe come across as yet doing this show.
Feed it to me.
And we've done a lot of it. So be prepared. Get the chemotherapy ready if you're listening to this. And keep in mind that Kirchick, again, is talking about how rapturous and entertaining and amazing this was. And like, this is the future of liberty and liberal values. Okay? The play's most inspired moment comes at the end when envisioning a political union of America and Europe dubbed Your America.
Your America World Police would be a good name for it, actually.
Lévy lists the members of his dream cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
John Locke and Rosa Parks would be placed in charge of human rights. Okay, I could see one problem. I mean, this is a dream cabinet in that it's going by dream logic and rules.
We're all having dinner, and I'm not wearing pants, and my teeth are dissolving out of my mouth.
This is like the games Bernard-Henri Lévy plays when he's at a dinner party with Wesley Clark and Jimmy Savile or whoever he was hanging out with back in the day. He's like, I want to dream a guest party of anyone who is alive or dead or fictional.
Yeah.
And it's like, who would you invite to come see my one-man show?
These ideas, I got them from the great Bernard Pivot and James Lipton.
I ask you, Jamie Jaime Kirchick, if God is real and you meet him, what would you want him to say to you?
That the Iraq War was a good idea.
So, okay. John Locke and Rosa Parks.
Your teeth are not too big for your face.
Tony Stark as Minister of Defense.
Of course.
John Locke and Rosa Parks would be placed in charge of human rights. I wonder how the real John Locke would feel about sharing an office of power with Rosa Parks.
He probably wouldn't be too cool with it, I gotta tell you.
That's interesting. Okay, you ready? Lin-Manuel Miranda to head the Department of Education. What, no Johnny's son appointment?
That one hurts. Barney the Dinosaur.
Jan Karski and Woodrow Wilson to take the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Woodrow Wilson, the guy who literally was maybe one of the worst American presidents of all time.
He would have had. He would definitely have a problem with Rosa Parks being at the same table at those cabinet meetings.
Team of rivals.
Woodrow Wilson, like the guy who like literally League of Nations... Like,
that was a huge success. There was never a war after that.
It was big success in his foreign affairs, getting America involved in World War I, and literally paving the way for World War II.
Yeah. No, it worked great.
He was a great, great.
He couldn't even get his own country to join the League of Nations.
He was a great leader and great American president.
John Karski was some fucking Georgetown professor.
Who gives a
shit? Of course.
Okay.
He probably knew him or something.
Okay. Okay, Woodrow Wilson will take the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, while Pussy Riot and Sylvia Beach,
what?
The American expat who founded the world-famous Shakespeare and Company bookshop along the Seine, assume the women's rights portfolio, mm-hmm. and Salman Rushdie is put in charge of secularization. Mm. What is that? What would that actually entail? Salman Rushdie just going around and just like, just grabbing women's headscarves off and being like, hey,
it's him.
Hey, I'm Salman Rushdie, everybody.
After every girl in a Muslim household in Europe reaches a certain age, they get a visit from Salman Rushdie.
He's like Santa Claus.
And he makes them his wife for a week.
Salman Rushdie is put in charge of secularization. And then he concludes by saying, yes, a fantasy, but these are fantastical times.
All the liberal heroes come in for a huge party.
And I'm like, Jamie, is this what your imagination is like? Is this literally what you fantasize about? Is this the art and culture, again, that you want to see, like, extant in the world? Is this unbelievably boring dipshit just play the dinner party game about, like, this is my liberal... Ooh, we're bringing Woodrow Wilson back, and the League of Nations will be a success now. Yeah.
He just pounds off to the idea of having brunch with Dean Acheson.
Oh.
But that's an amazing way to end the paragraph or the thing, because they're actually saying that you don't even have to infer it. They're saying there's no power here. There's no popular legitimacy. We're literally just talking to each other as a very small group of wealthy elite liberals. No connection to any sort of popular constituency. All we have left is to retreat into our brain like in Brazil and pretend that we could resurrect this dying liberal order. They're admitting the total impotence of their ideology and its incipient destruction.
In Jamie's fantasy, Woodrow Wilson will now be screening the film Waiting for Superman at the White House rather than his old film series. So, yeah, that
And again, it is history written in code.
was his goal to take this on the road to like the nations of Europe?
Yes,
like,
yes.
Present this to like the Polish people and have them be like, oh damn, Woodrow Wilson was cool. Yeah, I guess I'm not embracing this authoritarian turn anymore.
Yeah, no, I can't wait for the members of the Babi Yar Reenactment Society to sit down and watch this and be like, you know what? Maybe the Jews are okay.
So
wow. grim times, folks.
Again, whether it's Cheesecake Factory or literally one of the world's most insufferable bullshit artists literally telling you about his dream dinner parties, like this is Western civilization. I hope you're happy with all the wars we've fought to supposedly defend it. And
you can't even fucking make the Yeats quote. You can't say the best lack all conviction, because under no circumstances are these people the best of anything. The mediocre are having fantasy dinner parties while the worst are filled with pants of passionate intensity. That's where we are now. Wow.
So imagine that one man show.
The left better fucking get its shit together.
Yeah, really.
Holy fuck. Cause the center has absolutely collapsed. And the only thing that can beat these fucking jackals is the left.
At least we've cheesecake.
Yeah.
Indeed.
At least we've wontons and PF Chang's.
Yep.
Well, I think that's a good place to leave it for this week. But
I continue to be sorry that I'm not Felix, but he just woke up, so hopefully we'll get him for the next recording we have today.
Well, that's it for us today, but Felix will be coming over later. The whole gang will. We have some exciting programming coming for you sometime in the not too distant future. So until next time, guys.
Bye bye.
See ya. Wouldn't want to be ya.
Bernard
Henri Levy. Bye.
Ah, the French.